This podcast is brought to you by Homul Casino Resort, the player's place.
By the way, the official streak that ended last night, 384 days, 74 appearances, 76 and two-thirds innings since Mason Miller had allowed a home run.
Good Lord.
It's shocking, man.
Which was the longest active streak in Major League Baseball that came to an end with one swing of the bat by O'Neill Cruz last night.
You know, and you got to pick. That guy has shown up for you offense every single day for a year. Pick him up. Pick that man up last night. Pick that dude up.
And you talked about how it was bound to happen,
yeah,
which it was. You just wish, hey, if you had
was guaranteed to happen.
If you had a 2-0 lead and you do that and you go, all right,
no
problem, just get the next out and we win the game. Yeah. Fortunately, it was a 0. Even if you were up 1-0,
yeah,
and it's tied, you still have a chance to go and win that game, or extra innings can happen. But in a tie game 0-0, that's the last moment you wanted to see Mason Miller's streak come to an end.
Like, it hurt my heart.
Oh, so much.
It hurt my heart because the guy is just so flipping good and has been. But yeah, man, look, the issues with this team, they vary from week to week, right? For a while, it was starting pitch. Well, no, beginning of the season, it was offense. And then it was starting pitching, and the offense was raking. And then starting pitching is like, we got it together. We're going to go quality start every time out right now. And then the offense is falling off the table again. So it's unfortunate, man, that you can't kind of put it all together. They have put it together. They have had a really good second half. You cannot take that away from them. But winnable series, bad execution against the Mets, bad execution against the Pirates, Ben. As Craig Stammen said the other day, it's going to come back to haunt us, and I hope it doesn't.
Did it make anybody mad how easily Dustin Harris got his bunt down when he sacrificed Xander over to second base? I mean,
he's perfect.
Laid it down perfectly. Like, perfect.
Probably worked on it 400 times.
Right.
To be honest, he probably did.
No problem whatsoever. And if we're looking for the silver lining, this could actually be much more positive than a 1-0 loss. Michael King looks like
awesome.
Michael King. He threw, and this is from Kevin Acey's newsletter this morning. I didn't realize this. 24 first pitch strikes. That's more than any other starting pitcher in Major League Baseball this season. He was getting ahead, and he was ace like Michael King last night. If he goes on one of his runs, and this is like we've been seeing it the last couple of times out, like getting closer to it, this was the Michael King that you were hoping to see. He has the capability of carrying this now for a couple of months, you know, all the way through October, potentially, if the Padres can get there. And that is a game changer for the San Diego Padres. You have Michael King, like he was in the playoffs a couple of years ago, dominating. That's a completely different ball game, you know, for your Padres. Got to get there, but that is an incredibly positive sign, what we saw. He said, quote, right from the jump, I had it. Said, they are a very aggressive team, but I definitely was in the lanes that I wanted to get to, and that was the scouting report going in. Like, you can't groove fastballs early because they're an aggressive team. They're going to jump on them, so I felt like I was still able to get the outer or inner thirds early, executed some pitches off the plate that kind of fed into their aggressiveness.
And he, I mean, again, that game could have gone sideways in the first inning, you know, and by all accounts, it should have, but he locked it in after that. Benny got hosed on a call. Campy screwed him on a can't be challenged the wrong pitch early. We remain just the worst at challenging. I mean, it is just, Manny, it's the worst I've ever seen. That one in
right.
The ninth.
He got his right.
Not his next one.
No, but the first
the one.
One
in the ninth.
The one in the ninth. But like, I think
in the ninth,
it's like you're just using it to use it just in case. Yeah. Like, the ball's right down the middle.
He was walking away
he was
as
walking
he
away.
Challenged
it. It kills me. It's so funny, but it's not funny. It makes me want to die.
If I got it, I'm going to use it.
Yeah, yeah. This is really funny. When Mason Miller was talking about O'Neill Cruz, you know, getting to him, and he said, humans can be idiots sometimes. I mean, tip of your hat, good swing, crushed it, obviously. I just can't be throwing that pitch in that spot. That was only the 22nd changeup he'd thrown all year. Now, Mason Miller should have known, because I saw a story that came out about our new owner, Jose E. Feliciano, before the press conference, went down in the batting cages and wanted to see the traject machine, and got into the box against Mason Miller in the trajectory.
They talked about this at the news conference.
And hit a 96-mile-an-hour changeup. So Mason, if Jose E. Feliciano hits your changeup, you're going to throw it to O'Neill Cruz? I don't think so. Maybe you stick it in timeout and go with that heater, that slider, to a free-swinging O'Neill Cruz.
Now, none of the first 21 changeups he threw all season had been put into play.
That's crazy.
It's not one that he generally wants to throw for a strike. It's usually more of an off-the-plate sort of, you know, change their speed, change their eye, and then you come back with a fastball. It's not something that's supposed to be hit.
It's unfair.
He just missed his location so badly that he put it in the one spot. You really can't put it, especially against that guy.
Oh,
a left-handed hitter with the kind of bat speed that he has. So, yeah, it was dumb, and he knows it's dumb, and we can just file it away. And wouldn't be shocked if we never see another changeup the rest of this season.
Yeah.
And he may try to, in the offseason, once again incorporate it. I think someone wrote it. He's a white whale.
Yeah.
He feels like if he can add a devastating changeup, he probably sees Adrian Morihone doing his. Like, ooh, I would like that pitch as well.
Adrian was so good last night, too. He's just incredible. He's just an amazing weapon for this team. And, again, the offense sputtering as it has taxes the hell out of the bullpen. And when that happens, dude, that's what gets me. That's what makes me the most nervous, right? If the offense goes cold, guys, we've seen it, man. We've seen it. That's my biggest concern right now is the offense going into this stretch run because we have seen them get cold, and when they get cold, they get really cold. And Tati, they had three hits last night total. How many the night before?
Like six or seven, yeah.
But left everybody on base. They're just not playing. They're not playing great baseball right now offensively. You know, they're just not
just offensively. Pitching has been awesome. Fantastic again. So you can't complain about that, and ultimately that'll keep you in a lot of games.
They've had a chance to win every game.
Yeah,
right?
you shouldn't go into a complete tailspin with the kind of pitching they're getting.
Correct.
You're going to luck into a few runs and win some games, even if you are slumping. You know it's when the pitching is dicey, and then you go cold offensively. That's when you lose 8 out of 10, that would devastate them right now. I don't foresee that happening. But there's not much margin for error, obviously. Their lead down to one over the Diamondbacks in the wild card race.
Well, somebody said it was two games. Yeah, it's been two games, but it was also two games against the Mets where, you know, you didn't it's the execution for me. Like, that's what's bugging me. It's poor execution, poor base running in some instances in New York. And, again, beatable teams that you should beat. I know they're all pros. I know they're all big leaguers. You can't take any of it for granted. But you're in every game. You have a chance to win every game. You just haven't done it. And it's okay. You still have a game. You're still in the playoffs if the playoffs started today, but they don't. They don't start today.
In your last, nine games, you're 5-4, and those four losses are by a combined total of 5 runs.
Correct. So you're right there.
You had a chance to win every single one of them.
Yep.
Your wins are by 7, 2, 4, 3, and 5.
Yep.
So you're winning way more than you're losing, and you're doing it by bigger numbers. But ultimately, it's just a game over 500 over those last 9 games. So you got to, you know, now it's the results that matter the most.
Yep, and you've used your big dogs the last two nights, and you need a win desperately today. So what does that tell you? The offense has to show up today. They just have to take the torch and run today against Bubba Chandler.
Absolutely. Baseball coverage on 97.3 The Fan is presented by Xfinity. Score the most reliable Wi-Fi. One price, 5 years guaranteed. Xfinity, imagine that. Padres did get, I think, encouraging news last night. We will hear from probably him today at Petco Park. But Nick Pivetta threw a rehab start at Lake Elsinore. Last rehab start, didn't get out of the first inning. We remember what happened, walked off the mound. This time he got through 3 innings. And while the final numbers, you go, that kind of dicey, 4 hits, 3 runs, 2 homers allowed, threw 47 pitches, 35 of them for strikes, so he's filling up the zone. He's just out there to see if his arm feels good. They're not like scouting reports on each of the players and, hey, we need to go with a slider against this guy. I think that is ultimately a very positive sign. Just one walk, 4 strikeouts, gets back on the mound. We'll see how his arm feels today, but a very good step forward, I would say, for Nick Pivetta.
Yeah, it will be very, very important. Can he hit at all? Is he a hitter? Because the lineup needs a little juice right now.
And we will get another update on Joe Musgrove when he throws tomorrow for the El Paso Chihuahuas in their game as well. So, obviously, Joe a lot closer returning, but if the progression for Nick Pivetta, 47 pitches, you know, maybe 2 or 3 more rehab starts, we could see him by the middle of September as well.
When was Joe's last rehab? Tom wants to know. It was,
I think, a week ago.
A week ago.
A little over, maybe last Wednesday, maybe?
Okay. Sounds about right.
Or last Tuesday?
Yeah. Down in...
They paused him a little bit. He had a little back issue.
That's right.
But he's back tonight and could be his final rehab start. Or tomorrow night, so it could be his final rehab start. All right, Paulie is going to do a little something different today, I believe, on our Incorporator payoff.
Yeah, a little bit different. The Incorporator today, I did find the word. It was done in the fifth inning last night. Oligon. Well, here's
we're at the letter U for the Incorporator, and Woods pulled a little change. I don't even know what it is. Paulie, you've got it, though?
Oligon.
Oligon. Oligon. And listen, I hope it comes from Paul Skeens tonight, but it is a cry of sorrow. Oligon. You got to work that Miller into the broadcast.
You missed
tonight
it yesterday with Robbie Ray on the mound.
He has an oligon almost every pitch.
So that was the word. Now, typically on the Incorporator, we'll pull, I don't know, whatever's necessary for context, 20 to 30 seconds usually are the total clips. This one's about almost 3 minutes long because the inning started with, they do like the fan, go to the fan's website and you can submit your question of the game. And it was, what's the best baseball prank that you can remember witnessing? And so the Incorporator is kind of like the punchline of one of the pranks that Bob Scanlon, former MLB pitcher, tells. But I wanted to hear all of the stories, all of the pranks. So
We got to ask Boone about it too now.
Oh,
so
100%.
I'm going to write that down.
I thought, let's switch it up. I wanted to just take a couple of minutes. This is from the bottom of the fifth inning last night.
Foul ball, 1-1 on Renhefo. Yeah, the best rookie prank you have ever witnessed, obviously, safe for radio. That is the question of the day from Chris in Sacramento.
Well, as it turns out, I was traded to the Chicago Cubs alongside Chuck McElroy. Chuck and I went to the Cubs in exchange for Mitch Williams, who went from the Phillies over to the Cubs, I should say. And as it turns out, Chuck McElroy happened to be the guy that all the veterans wanted to do pranks on. So I got a chance to see all kinds of different pranks on poor Chuck. And the first one, you've heard the strongest sit-up, man with the strongest sit-up? Okay.
1-1, and Renhefo takes high.
So you get on the ground, and they say, okay, we're going to put a player on each one of your arms, and you've got to do a sit-up, and you got to try to lift this guy up. And you're like, okay, no problem, I can do it. What you don't know is that the players on each side of your arm are there to pin you down, and then they come up with a big bucket of nasty stuff from the restroom and pour it all over you. So he suffered that one. Then the next one was, I'd never seen this one before or since, but one of the players had this horn, and it looked like a trumpet, basically. And
horn.
You're trying to make a sound out of this trumpet.
3-1 is at the knees and a called strike.
So these guys are blowing on this horn. They can't get a sound out of it. Hey, Chuck, do you want to try getting a sound out of this horn? So the other thing about this horn is the bell of it is bent back towards your face. So he's blowing into this horn.
3-2, swing and a miss. Strike three. Number three for Skeens. One out in the fifth.
Good sinker. Bottom part of the zone for strike three. And as Chuck blows into this horn, all of this baby powder comes flying out of the bell of the horn and covers his face completely. And it turns out, I guess, you have to push down one of the buttons. If you push a button down and you blow on the thing, nothing happens. But as soon as you don't push the button down, boom, you got powder all over your face.
Now that's good old-fashioned fun right there.
So we got powdered on that one.
Here's Camposano.
Then there was the wombat.
Crouched as in the animal, the rodent.
The animal, oh yeah. Have you ever seen a wild wombat? Oh, it's a mean creature, Jesse, and it comes in a cage, and the umpire crew happened to have a wombat, and they brought it in. This big cage comes in there. They tell Chuck to come and look close at the cage.
Inside, 1-1.
And the cage opens up, and this fake tail comes flying out at you, and it hits you in the face, and you think this wombat has escaped the cage, and he goes flying right all over the room thinking this wild wombat is coming at him.
I should apologize to the wombat community, by the way. They're marsupials. Swing and a miss, 1-2. I said rodent. I don't want to misidentify anybody.
So poor Chuck McElroy, he was sort of the brunt of all the rookie hazing that year in the Cubs clubhouse.
Oh, the oligon that must have come out of his mouth.
Incredible.
All in, two strikes on Camposano.
Best one I've ever heard, ever, is the Joe Carter, Derek Bell prank. So rookie, Derek Bell, just getting the big leagues, man. Got a little money. He bought a green Ford SUV Jeep, and he wouldn't shut up about it in the clubhouse. Like, you guys see my new ride? And everyone's like, it's great, dude. You got a Ford SUV. Relax. Like, but for him, it was everything. So Joe Carter, they had his car taken from the parking lot, driven onto the stadium turf at the beginning of the game, and had the PA announcer pretend that a lucky seat had won that car, like a fan appreciation raffle. And they show Derek Bell like this. As his car is parked on the field, they're giving it away. And so they got him. And by the way, they went on to win the World Series like a couple of weeks after that. But it's so good. Like, Elise, that's an elite prank.
Elise in the chat says a bucket from the restroom, that first prank.
I thought that too, Paulie. And it made me, that can't be.
Yeah, I don't think it's that.
I've seen them do it with like mustard, ketchup.
I was thinking
shaving
like shaving cream.
Shaving cream from the restroom, maybe.
Yeah, like you walk into the like players' locker room at Fantasy Camp Woodsy, you go into their bathroom, they have like products and stuff rail. Like,
that's probably what
it's
it is.
Shaving cream, it's toothpaste,
They have that like, they have like that old school like face. Ball, what do you call it? Like
aftershave,
but it's like the old school that you see, like in barbershops.
Yeah. Stings.
Got, Home Alone. It does. Yeah. Stings the nostrils. There's no way it was toilet water.
I can't imagine.
No,
they
wouldn't
want
so.
That either. I mean, the prankster also gets somewhat victimized if you're that close to it. So
that's true. And who is Chuck McElroy, and what did he do? Like, holy cow, is he okay? Like.
So at Billy Ray's Celebration of Life on Saturday, Dan Fouts told about the story of Billy Ray's rookie pranking. And this is the classic one, obviously, for NFL players, but training camp, and Billy Ray's the, you know, top draft pick, fifth overall selection. And a few days in, Dan says, I pull up in my Mercedes convertible and I see him and I go, Rook, want to come to dinner with some of us vets? And of course, Billy Ray says, oh yeah, Dan Fouts wants to take us to dinner. And so off they go to local steakhouse where the vets, of course, order it up.
Sure.
The lobster, the steaks, the expensive wine.
How do people not?
Don't I know?
And then near the end of dinner, as you know, Billy Ray goes to use the restroom, they all bolt and leave him with,
no pun intended,
you know, the check, which is obviously insanely high. But what I didn't realize, and I didn't even remember, but Dan said, of course, this is the 1980s. Not only are you left without, you know, anyone to pay for the meal, but your ride is gone. You've got no phone. You got to find a quarter to get a payphone. There's no Uber. There's no Lyft. You are completely stuck
alone
at this restaurant alone.
Broke now.
Broke and having to pay for this meal.
Oh, so they actually made him pay.
No, they actually did make him pay. But then in classic BR fashion, when it was his turn to pass it along to Junior Seau, when Junior was a rookie, Billy Ray, they did it, but he warned Junior.
He said he couldn't do it.
He couldn't do it. He was too nice and said, need to warn you, Junior. They're going to stick you with a bill at the end. And Junior was
thinking, no.
Yeah.
It's been so publicized, all of these pranks. How does anyone fall for this anymore?
Right.
Any rookie is like, you guys want to go out to dinner tonight? He's like, no, I'm good. No, I'm going to take it to the house. No, you need to come. No, I'm not coming. I know what you guys are going to do. I know exactly what you're going
to
do.
I've just been having PTSD to January of this year.
Sure.
When our fantasy camp, it was fantasy camp. Usually the second night is take your coach out to dinner where you know you're paying for your meal, and then you're going to be chipping in towards making sure all of the coaches on your team don't have to pay. And we go to this steakhouse, and Jake Peavy and Andy Ashby start ordering a bunch of food. And we're like, okay.
Seafood towers.
Starting to do the... No. We're starting to do the math already. And then Trevor Hoffman shows up, I don't know, an hour into dinner. We still hadn't even ordered drinks yet, except Ashby's already ordering. Like, we're going to take three of those. We'll take two more of those. Hoffy walks in and goes, how much are those seafood towers? Yeah, we'll take three of those. We can put one on each table.
Oh, my God.
And we're all doing the math in our head, and we're going, this is going to be like $800 a person.
Just want to die.
My wife's going to kill me.
Sorry, babe. Yes, I did spend $1,000 on dinner.
I knew I'd be
night.
Paying a little extra, but not $800, $900. And then at the end, Ashby and Peavy and Hoffy split the bill. The three of them took care of all of us.
Did.
But for like a good 2 hours, I was on the other end of the table from the coaches.
Psychological torture, rather
psychological
than
torture.
Actual,
yeah, than actual physical.
Prank. There were guys texting their wives or like moving
so
money
sorry.
Around.
Yes,
like,
yes, can you extend my line of credit by $500
just for tonight?
Yeah. So good, man. God. So
all
good.
Right, let's take a quick timeout. When we come back, don't do this. Sign stealing back in the baseball conversation universe.
Yes, and is Pat Murphy a hardo or not?
We'll discuss coming up next with Ben and Woods after a check traffic on 97.3 The Fan. First, though, I'll tell you about SDFatLoss.com. It's the way I lost 40 pounds in 60 days, and you can lose weight fast as well, up to a pound of fat per day and 10 to 20% of your body weight in just 2 months. And as I've been telling you, it's all based on real foods, normal stuff from the grocery store. I ate a lot of chicken, some steak. I like some ahi tuna for my meals when I have them, a couple of them a day. They'll explain it all when you get your free consultation at SDFatLoss.com. But it's about, you know, eating right and then changing your metabolism, jump-starting it so you lose the weight fast, but then you're able to keep the weight off after the 2 months are done. They call it the maintenance phase. And I looked at, I got on the scale this morning, still down the 40 pounds over 3 years later. And I have SDFatLoss.com to thank for it. Have not had to use the GLP-1 injections. Didn't go down that road with the side effects and the muscle loss that comes with it and how hard it is to keep the weight off if you ever get off those injections. Nope, this is a legitimate weight loss, fast and lasting with SDFatLoss.com with no exercise necessary, nothing extra to buy either. No shakes, no bars. It's just you, the program, some great coaching, some great counselors. Check it out today. Go to SDFatLoss.com. Take $200 off right now during their summer special at SDFatLoss.com. Results may vary.
Don't do this.
It's time for Don't Do This.
What were you thinking?
Three stories from the world of sports that make us all shake our heads.
Why?
How many times do I have to tell you?
I'm sorry, I fudged up, guys.
You idiot. You moron.
You dumbass.
The apple sometimes does far fall from the tree.
Don't do this.
Do not tweet that.
With Ben and Woods.
I like a Nickelback song or two.
On 97.3 The Fan.
Ben and Woods brought to you by David P. Shapiro, criminal defense attorneys, helping good people regain control of their future when charged with a crime since 2010. Visit DavidPShapiroLaw.com. I'll start us out on Don't Do This today. A fallout from what happened on Monday night in Arizona between the Cubs and the Diamondbacks, where third base coach Quentin Berry, Aztec for life, I believe, Quentin Berry, isn't he from San Diego State?
He's from San Diego. I know that.
Did he go to San Diego State? Look that up for me. Was, in fact, relaying some pitches of
Grossmont, San Diego State. Yeah.
Merrill Kelly to his own batters, which caused the Arizona Diamondbacks to get really chippy.
So mad.
Because they were under the impression, mistaken impression, that that was against the rules.
How?
Well, they made a big deal this offseason about moving the coaches back into the coaches' boxes so they couldn't get like the angle to pick up signs and steal those things, because that was a focus of the offseason. But as it turns out, well, let's first start
with... He was in the box.
Let's first start with Merrill Kelly's reaction. He was the pitcher on the mound, and here's what he had to say after that game on Monday.
What was happening with third base coach?
We just thought he was relaying signs. We thought he had something on my changeup. We thought he was giving, especially the lefties. Every time I was throwing a changeup, we felt like he was relaying that.
Is that something that you've experienced before?
I mean, you know, that's stealing signs is as old as baseball. I think it's a little when it comes from a coach. You know, I think, you know,
come
if it's
on.
A guy on second base and they see the grip in your glove, or if the hitters can see something that you're doing with your glove, you know, I think that's fair game. I think guys have been doing that since the beginning of baseball. I think it's a little bush league when it comes from outside that. I think inside the lines is one thing. I think the guys that are standing outside the lines, I think it's a little bush league. That being said, I got to take a look at what I'm doing, because clearly he had something. And obviously if he has it, then other people will probably pick up on it as well.
So that's a shouting match, you know, kind of ensued. And I think there's not much worse you can call another guy in Major League Baseball than bush league. That's a real insult. But as it turns out, Torrey Lovello called Major League Baseball and was informed the next day, no, that's perfectly legal what Quentin Berry, as long as he stays in the box, if he's picking up your grips from there,
that's
he is well within his rights to then translate that information, transmit it to his batter to see if they can get an edge. So, to Torrey Lovello's credit, he called Craig Counsell and apologized for his team's overreaction to the situation of what happened in Arizona on Monday night.
It was an overreaction, to be sure. And again, QB in the box, like,
That's only on Merrill Kelly at that point. Only on Merrill Kelly.
Now, if you step outside the box to try to get a view of it, that's
correct.
Against the rules.
That's against
now.
The rules.
And they did crack down on that.
Yep.
But if you are still in the box and you can pick up on it, you're
fair
well
game.
Within your rights to do whatever
I love
you
it.
Want.
Just the subtle hand drop to the lefty hitter, sees him drop his hand, change up. And they hit him well. Of course, the Diamondbacks could walk it off last night. This was two nights ago. I saw a video of Quentin Berry and Jeff Bannister before the game. Both had their fungos in their hands, and they're standing out at first base chopping it up because they had been lighting each other up. It was great. I like when baseball gets a little chippy like that, but I thought the Diamondbacks came off looking a little odd. I originally thought that Pat Murphy came off looking a little odd last night when he benched rookie shortstop Cooper Pratt. Cooper's up to the plate against the Mets, hits a ball. He's not sure where it is. He didn't square it up, just kind of flared it.
It goes all the time.
It goes a million miles in the air. He then picks it up, starts running, not loafing, in my opinion, but he's running down the line, and he rounds first. It drops into the Bermuda Triangle. The umpire, the outfielders kind of fumble around with a little bit and then pick it up, throw it second. Cooper's still standing on first. 5 seconds later, Pat Murphy, pinch runner. In the fifth, sends David Hamilton out to run for him. Cooper Pratt looks like, what is going on? He pulled him, and he pulled him for not running hard out of the box, even though he didn't know where the ball was. He had no idea where he hit it. So here's what Pat Murphy had to say after the game.
We asked him to get a bunt down, and he pulled back on a strike. That happens maybe with one strike. That's trying to get guys second and third for Churio in a game where we weren't swinging it too good to that point. So we get first and second. We ask him to bunt, and he got it. The first one was a good attempt. The second one, he pulled back, strike right down the middle. Later, he popped the ball. The next at bat, he popped the ball up to right field and didn't run. And the ball landed and stopped. Now, he would have easily got the second base. Mm. What could have happened after that, I'm not sure, but you can't have a guy not understanding that. And I felt like after the first at bat, when he didn't, attempted a bunt with a ball right down the middle, and second at bat, the ball, the pop-up that landed fair and he wasn't at second base. It's time to let him know that, and it's not laziness. I know who this kid is. He's a great kid. It's not laziness, but you got to have your head in the game, because these games, like today, it comes down to Lindor's great catch or whatever it might be, an errant throw or whatever. So you've got to be in. You've got to be locked in if you're going to play at this level.
I just don't know, man. So he didn't miss a sign on the bunt. He just
pulled back.
He tried on the first one, and then the second one, maybe he misread and he pulled back, thought it was going to be a ball. That happens.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean your head's not in the game, necessarily.
I don't necessarily mind.
And then watching the video of the pop-up.
Yeah, he would not have made it to second.
I don't think he would have made it to second base. He hesitated for a second when he didn't know where it was going.
Yeah,
as you see, 80% of players do. What exactly is Pat Murphy trying to accomplish here?
Teaching him a lesson.
A lesson of what?
A lesson of I think the bunt is what really pissed him off.
It sounded like it.
I think that was the one.
But he didn't miss a sign. He knew he was supposed to bunt.
Yeah,
he squared around.
Pulled it back.
And he pulled it back.
You pulled it back on a strike down the middle. What are you doing?
It's an error in judgment, but man, the guy's so hard out there. You don't bunt a lot. I mean, that is some serious. Maybe like a JV high school coach kind of move.
It's crazy. But I mean, he's a rookie. The rookies may get that treatment from Pat Murphy, but here is what rookie Cooper Pratt had to say after the game.
Cooper, what message do you take from that moment tonight?
I got to be better. Stuff that can't happen. It's not winning baseball. Didn't help the team win. And it won't happen again, that's for sure.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
From the not getting the bunt down to not running hard to first and turning it into a double. It won't happen again. I can promise you that. It's not winning baseball.
Now, my reaction probably wouldn't have gone down as well. I know Pat Murphy, my manager, has been around a long time. I think he's completely in the wrong here and owes me an apology for pulling me out of the game.
Yeah, you'd be cut.
Yeah,
I would cut you.
That would have been your last day.
I think he'd be 100% right if he had said that. I think Pat Murphy was in the wrong there.
I don't think so.
Then you're showing up your manager.
I know.
Showing up a manager.
Can't a manager be wrong, too?
Sure. Yes.
I think Pat Murphy owes Cooper Pratt an apology.
Maybe he did.
He embarrassed. He might have. He embarrassed him.
We
on
don't
the
know
field.
That he didn't. Coop, come into my office. Let's have a chat. You know, we don't know that.
No, I think you know, you teach a rookie a little bit of a lesson there. I bet you Booney would tell you the same thing. I bet you B-Law would tell you the same thing. I mean, sometimes you got to send a message. Now, if guys give 10-year vet. I had yesterday our GM. We were talking, and he said, "Why didn't someone tell Merrill to take the other night?" And I go, "Peter, you'd be surprised how little instruction that managers give in the middle of a game. Like, hey, make sure." What they'll say is, "Hey, make sure you get yours, right?" But they're not going to say, "I want you to take first pitch." No, he doesn't want Jackson Merrill going up there thinking about taking a pitch. It may be the best pitch he sees. So they don't do a lot of steal signs and take signs and things like that. They don't. They let these guys play baseball. Because why? They are
professionals.
And they let them play. They want them playing free and easy. There are times when they'll put a bunt on or a hit and run or a suicide squeeze or whatever. Yes, of course, that happens. They do manage those. But in a take sign, here, like, no, he wants his hitters going up there, their mind free to do as they feel they need to do. Jackson should know, this guy hasn't thrown a strike. I'm going to wait him out. He didn't. He went up there and hacked a couple nights ago, and that's on Jackson.
And I get it. But even a good bunter is not going to get it down 100% of the time. You're going to square around, and that fastball rose a little more than you thought it was going to rise, and you end up getting under it.
But you don't need to apologize for that. He needs to get that bunt down. That's Murphy's whole thing.
But a manager knows that not every bunt is going to be executed perfectly over the course of a season.
I didn't mind it. I thought it was when I thought it was for the running down to first, I was like, that's a little bit of a hard-o move, because I actually thought he ran once he located the ball. It got to have felt like a foul ball to him. It had to, because it looked like one.
Of course, we see it all the time.
So I thought he ran fine.
Yeah,
I think again, it's a message. I mean, they're 81-51. They're doing something right. And Cooper Pratt's a young player. Like he said, you heard his he's like, that's not going to happen again. He's lit a fire under that kid. I think it's a great move. I think it's a pretty brilliant managerial move.
All right, we got Brett Boone coming up, so I'm going to skip doo-doo this for now, and we'll move on.
Yeah, let's keep the positivity to a minimum here on Brett Boone.
Next, here on 97.3 The Fan.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. GEGE 000466. For a full list of games and rules, play at 7 Mile Casino. Visit 7milecasino.com.
First, though, 7 Mile Casino, our place to play cards. It is so easy to get to. Right down the 5 freeway in Chula Vista. You just get off at E Street if you're heading south, and you're already on Bay Boulevard. It's that road that runs right along the 5. Go through the signal, and then right there on your left, you'll see it. You'll pull in, you'll find a parking spot, you'll walk right in, and in front of you, Woods, what are you going to see?
A California-style blackjack table. You're going to see a Texas Hold'em room. You're going to see Paigao and Baccarat, and you will see a really nice bar area, restaurant. Got a few booths there. Beautiful patio area out there by the bay. So it's a fun day, fun night, fun morning, whatever you want to do. It's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it's just 7 minutes from downtown.
Love that. It's an anytime option for San Diego. They treat their players right. Great dealers, comfortable chairs, no smoking. Check it out today at 7 Mile Casino, just 7 minutes from downtown. Feel like I'm wearing it again. Eric Price in our chat says, Ben is soft.
Yeah, you'd be a soft manager.
For my reaction to the Cooper Pratt
I think you'd be
benching.
A soft manager.
I would be.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I told Woods during the break, if I made a mistake, and I do all the time, flubs, you know, going over our clock a little bit. I did it in this last segment. Making Booney wait. I apologize to Brett Boone, who's standing by on our SDCCU fan hotline. It's not Big Bang Banking. It's better. And Adam came and just yanked me in the middle of the show.
I would love it.
I'd be a wreck.
The next day,
I'd be
right?
a wreck for like weeks if I even came back at all.
Was Booney on the line?
Yes.
Booney, you ever get pulled from a game by a manager to teach you a lesson?
No.
Never. Of course not, because his name's Brett Boone.
No, that's not necessarily true.
Have you seen it happen?
You never made a mistake in a game? You never had a brain cramp?
Absolutely. But never from an effort perspective. And that's what usually gets scolded.
Yeah.
Is did you run it out? Did you not? We all make mistakes, and the physical mistakes you got to deal with as long as the intent is there. Now, one time I had, and this was the worst. I was in Texas. I was just a salty veteran I think it was Paul Molitor who was, I had so much respect for him. To this day, I love him. He was my hitting coach in Seattle. And this is, you know, I'm 12, 13 years into my big league career. And I was in Texas and I hit a ground ball, a one hop bullet right back to the pitcher.
Yep.
And the pitcher was already sprinting to first base for that underhand lob to end the inning. And I mean, I was out by 30 feet. I peeled off halfway.
Yeah.
Because it was out.
Yes.
And I went back to the dugout and Paul Molitor, of all people, who has never said a negative word to me in his life, pulled me aside and said, "Booney, we always touch the bag." And he kind of gave it to me like a, like my dad was scolding me for getting a C minus on my algebra test. And coming from Paul at that stage of my career, I was devastated. And I'm like, Paulie's disappointed in me right now. And so little instances like that through my career, definitely learning moments. But no, I never got yanked from a game mid-game. I've seen it happen.
Effort. Like in this case, last night, Pat Murphy pulled, you know, rookie Cooper Pratt. And he's it basically went back to, he said, "Yeah, man, I needed him to get a bunt down." And he, you know, attempted and then pulled back on the ball down the middle. He's not locked in. And the next at bat, couldn't find the ball, didn't run super hard out of the bag, wasn't going 100%. So he pulled him in the fifth inning. And Cooper Pratt was like, "Can't happen. That's not winning baseball." I thought it was a really well, managed. Ben said that Pat Murphy owes him an apology. I don't think he does.
I mean, you see it a million times this season where a guy pops one up. It looks like it's probably foul. Sees it, realizes, and then he ran.
Then he runs,
And then he ran. I mean, it wasn't like he forgot what he was supposed to do.
It was a lesson, I think. I think it was just a lesson.
But I think it's, you create that culture in the individual organization. If that's not the culture and that's not protocol, then you can't do that. But if you come in and you have the... As a manager, if you have that it factor where, hey, we know around here if X, this play is expected, and if not, anybody's – obviously, there's a pecking order. Obviously, you're going to get the benefit of the doubt. The more success you have, the longer you're in the league than if you're a rookie. But if the expectations are set to a certain standard – and anyone is game, yes, it's going to take the rookie's going to be a quicker hook.
Oh, yeah.
Than the veteran all-star.
Oh, yeah.
But I kind of like if Pat Murphy sets that bar and it's adhered to and it's known amongst those players, I think it's a great atmosphere to have. I always think when guys get to the big leagues, it's like, you know, I'm going to treat these guys as men. They're not college players anymore. College level in the high school, that's for discipline, that's for life lessons outside of sport. But when you get to the big leagues, this is a job, this is big time business. It's all about wins and losses. If you don't do your job, you're going to get fired anyway. So in the meantime, before you get fired, I am going to treat you like a man. But if your play and your effort level doesn't reflect the standards of what I expect as a skipper, I love stuff like that. And I think we've gotten away from it in this day and age, because it's a different time. It's definitely a different time. A lot of positive things about this time. And there's some things that I wish, you know, I wish they would keep this kind of throwback mentality in there.
Yeah, 100%. There's got to be a little mix of both. Now, this is a weird one, man. Ketel Marte, the situation going on, Booney in Arizona. So I was listening to Burnsy and Will Clark's, their podcast, and Will Clark, you know, for all their, like, back in the day, this would never happen. It did. It happened back in the day to him twice.
Sure did.
Where a guy no-called, no-showed for a big league game. Did that ever happen to you? I've been waiting all week to ask you.
I don't think it ever happened to me. I've heard stories of it with other teams. Now, because I've been in so many different scenarios, when it first broke, and I've obviously the Twitter world goes crazy and everybody's got their opinions, I always like for there to be a backstory. It's like when somebody gets drilled out of nowhere and he gets hit in the shoulder blades.
Right.
So what was that for? I said, you guys don't know. I said, we've got to figure out. There might be something that happened two spring trainings ago on a backfield, and that was an eye for an eye right there.
I love it.
So for me to jump in as an expert right away, I think that wouldn't be prudent of me. So same thing with the cartel. I don't know anything about that organization. I'm not in that locker room with the other 25 guys. I don't know what's going on with Cartel Marte. There might be something that's not for public consumption behind the scenes that's going on. Well, the longer this, you know, the farther we get away from the incident, I'm starting to figure out there is no rhyme or reason. This was something, and Marte has had that kind of reputation. Last year, they were trying to move him because they don't like things, some things about his character. Then all of a sudden, this pops up, and the farther you get away from it, there's really no excuse for what happened. I couldn't imagine. I'm going to give my teammate the benefit of the doubt. If a teammate doesn't show up, doesn't call, obviously we're going to all be feverishly as players trying to get a hold of the said player that hasn't shown up. If that doesn't happen, we're going to have concern. Something happened. There's no way he would ever do this.
Right.
Da, 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 da. But at the bottom line is, if you really don't have a legit reason for showing up to a big league game in a pennant race, I don't know how I would walk back into that clubhouse. I mean, hat in hand, tail between my legs, apologize till the cows come home. But right there, I lost a huge credibility point with my teammates if that's the scenario. You know, we've all got problems. We've all got issues. We've all got families. We've all got things. My answer would be this: stock as a hitter or as a player. If my teammate didn't show up, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt till the end. But I'll tell you what, something major better have happened, and I hope it didn't in a negative way.
Right.
Better have happened for him not to show up for the game. Especially Lovello had him in the lineup. Imagine being the skipper. You got him in the lineup. Your guy's not showing. The press is like, hey, where's Marte? Oh, he'll be here. Don't
no
worry
idea.
About it.
Yeah.
And then egg on your face. What kind of program you running here where your players don't show up?
Well, obviously, Booty, you didn't have the technology back in your day when you were a player. But like nowadays,
it's a text.
Cattell's teammates, they can see the video going viral of him at the casino that night. And they're going,
right.
What is happening?
That is unbelievable. And I was asked this question the other day. You know, what do you do if you're the skipper? Well, once again, we're in a different day and age. Back in the day, it's a no-brainer. You're out. You're suspended. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Now, the fact that he's their best player.
Correct.
Comes in the role. He's their best player. They're in a pennant race. All these things matter. If I'm a modern-day skipper, I wouldn't just roll. I wouldn't just say, here's what's happening. I would talk to my coaching staff. I would have a meeting with the players, especially there's a pecking order. I'm going to go veteran to rookie, but I want to get a collective thought process. What's going on in the clubhouse? What's going on in the players' minds? And if they feel that him coming back here, back into that clubhouse, into that atmosphere is going to be a detriment and they can't really get over it, well, you got to do what you got to do. But that's not going to be a decision I make. You never know what those players are feeling. If those players are, no, you let him back in, we need him to win, well, then we need him to win. So I don't think it's as clear cut as it used to be at the old school way, which was, oh, you're done. I mean, I couldn't imagine. You know, you talk about coming into a Bobby Cox or a Bruce Bochy, who's a sweetheart of a man when I played for him. To a Lou Piniella, if you didn't show up for a game with zero explanation, you know, send a note, send a courier pigeon.
Something.
You got to get something to somebody to tell them that you're not laying in a ditch somewhere. That's what everybody's thinking right away. If you don't show up,
but
is something happened?
And you're right. Of course, communication is important. But Woods, you're a champion of mental health. I think we all understand. And Torrey Lovello understands. Cattell Marte has some.
Yeah,
mental health issues, whatever they are. It's personal, it's private, but he's dealing with stuff. We've seen it in past seasons as well, dealing with stuff. Now, in your day, Booney, you don't bring any of that to the ballpark. Nowadays, you know, I think we're better for it, that we have a little more empathy and understand that it's not something that people can always have complete control of, and we got to be a little more understanding. Is that a bad thing, like, that we can get over this?
It, it, No, it's not a bad thing. That's why still we can sit here and talk about this all day long. But I always say this, we're not living with these guys. We're not right in the clubhouse. We don't know the nuances. We don't know all the little details. You ever get there and you talk to your buddy, hey, how could he do this? Well, let me give you the backstory to go, oh, okay, now I understand a little bit. The only people that understand are the people in that room, the guys that live with him, that travel with him for 7 months a year are pretty much family members. So they might, those players down there might have a different perspective than we do because we don't know everything. And maybe it's so private that they can't share that with us. I found that clubhouse is a sacred place. And the day you stop, the day you retire and walk out of that clubhouse, you're no longer a part of that club. No matter how successful you were in a city or how big you were in that clubhouse, as soon as you retire, you're not one of them anymore. And you're not privy to the inside information. So yes, Ben, I definitely agree with you that you have to have a little compassion. And the only guys that know what happened are the guys down there. And that's why they need to make that decision collectively on what the consequence is going forward. Because it could be, like you said, it could be something much deeper than any of us know. But it could just be a guy pissed off about something and saying, screw them, I'm not showing up. If that's the case, well, then you're done.
That happens, yeah, 100%.
Booney, we're going to save all our Padres talk for tomorrow because, as I understand, you're coming in for our roundtable.
They don't pay me enough for that.
No, yeah. There's no commercials. It's an hour. Bring your A game.
And your appetite.
We're also going to be asking you, because we were talking about it earlier, rookie pranks that you have observed. So think that one over, and we'll have that for you tomorrow, along with some great wings from Epic Wings, and breadsticks are amazing.
I don't like that
bring
smile
your appetite
on his face right now. Yeah. He knows. He's got a few stories.
You got it, guys. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, talk to Booney. You later. Booney, he's going to be with us tomorrow for our Epic Wings, Epic Padres Roundtable. That'll be at 9 a.m. Looking forward to it already. And that brings us to the end of our second hour of Ben and Woods. We will come back, though, and we'll have Take on Woods. We may still have Jeff Passan joining us. No maybe. Updates yet for sure, but he has said he was willing to come on, so we'll let you know if he locks in a time. And it's all coming up with more Ben and Woods, second half on the way on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan.